Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Everyone has heard of Gettysburg, but for sheer ferocity of fighting, it's tough to match the horrendous stories of what happened in the fight for Tennessee in the battles of Stones River and Chickamauga. Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies by Daniel F. Korn, is the story of two very different armies and their equally different commanders. Daniel Korn was born in 1952 to Italian and German immigrants in the industrial city of Rochester in western New York. Daniel followed his passions and aspirations through his academic career, which eventually unfolded into his first two published novels, Dawn's Gray Steel, a novel about Shiloh, April 5th through April 8th, 1862, which was given a five-star Amazon review by Newt Gingrich, and Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies. And author Daniel Korn is our guest on This Week in America. Daniel, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing good. Daniel, this is a wonderful book that you've written. So much history, you make it come alive. Let's start with the inspiration to write not only this book, Tennessee Thunder, but the initial book as well. What got you started writing?
Well, I was always fascinated by what Walt Disney would do with his miniseries and stuff like that, and one in particular, Johnny Shiloh. But I had read Killer Angels. A teacher of mine had recommended it to me when I was in college. And while we were, I actually took a course from him on the Civil War. One of the reasons why I took the class was because the last week or so of class, we actually toured Civil War battlefields. This was a summer class. And I'd always had kind of a hankering just looking at things. And the more I learned about the Civil War, the more interested I got. I'd read all of Bruce Catton's stuff, eventually Shelby Foote's, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of people tell you he's got the biggest Civil War library you ever saw. But while we were on the tour, we were at a particular battlefield called the Wilderness. And at the Wilderness, while walking around on the battlefield, I happened to be by myself for a little bit. And I was in a particular section of the battlefield. And the Wilderness was a very, very bad fight. It was the first fight between Grant and Lee. And it was fought in the same area as had been Chancellorsville, and it's a very, very wooded area. And unfortunately, during the course of the battle, the woods caught fire, and upwards of 10,000 men either died or were burned or consumed or whatever you want to call it in those fires. So I am walking around in this particular area, and it's about 11 o'clock in the morning. It was a very hot day. I remember that because the time temp at the visitor center, about 90. And I'm just, getting ready to start my junior year of college, and I'm walking around on this battlefield, and all of a sudden it feels like someone had dumped a pitcher of ice cold water right down my back. Scared the daylights out of me. And there was nobody there, and there was nothing there. I looked up to see if there's some bird had hit me on their bombing run or something like that, but no, there's nothing there. And it upset me. It scared me. And when I got back with the group later on, I told my professor about it that night, and he kind of poo-pooed the whole thing, saying, "Oh, now you got your little ghost story." Till I got home, and I told my parents about this. And my father said to me, "You need to tell your grandmother, his mom, about this," which I did. Several weeks later, I was at her house. And when I told her the story about what had happened, and she just about interrogated me as well as he had, my dad had, she went and got her old family Bible. The thing was about as big as she was. And she went through the book until she found a particular page. And when she found that page, she turned the book around and shoved it in front of me and stabbed the page with a finger and says, "Is that where you were?" And listed on the page was the name of an ancestor of mine who had enlisted in the Union Army in 1861. And here's all these battles listed that he participated in. At the very bottom of it, it says, "MIA, presumed dead, Wilderness, May 4th through 6th, 1864.
Wow.
Talk about being touched from
yes,
the grave.
Yes. And capturing your attention. I can understand why that interest developed at that point. What was your initial feeling? It would almost be like having the cold water poured down your back again, that like the realization.
It was kind of scary.
Yeah.
I was somewhat frightened by it, but at the same time, I was also incredibly intrigued. And I thought, wow, this is cool. Now, I have to admit that since then, my wife and I and other friends of mine, I've been a reenactor, was a Revolutionary War reenactor, was a Civil War reenactor for years. And we've had a number of incidents that have happened on various and sundry either battlefields or during events or something like that that you simply cannot explain scientifically. My wife has actually experienced a couple of them with me. So she knows I'm not going nuts crazy with this. In fact, in Gettysburg, we've had several that have occurred to us. I've been there over 50 times, and I always find something new and different. But why Shiloh? Shiloh was the Dawn's Greatest Steel is Shiloh was because I felt that nobody wrote novels about the West. Nobody wrote a story about the West. You saw everything being written about Gettysburg and the wars in the East, but very little was actually written about the West. So I decided to take a shot at this just because I had read Killer Angels and was absolutely intrigued by Jeff Sharaw's novel. And I decided I'm going to try this. And I wrote about 150 pages at the time in this orange notebook, and then I got writer's block. Stopped. Cold. I put it away. And I didn't pull it out again for, it's got to be at least 20 years, 23 years. And my daughter, who was in seventh grade at the time, my daughter Jenna, happened to discover the notebook while she was looking for stuff for her Civil War project. You know, Dad's got all this stuff. Okay. And she found it. She brought it to me, and she demanded to know why I hadn't finished it. And when I tried to explain a few things to her about life and everything, she looked at me over the top of it and says, Daddy, aren't you the guy who's always telling people to finish what they started? Well,
yes.
By that time I was teaching. I had a lot more people that I could actually ask for assistance from, which I did. Other teachers got involved with all of this. And we finished Dawn's Great Steel. And the rest is history, as far as that's concerned. It went from there. And a lot of people asked afterwards, after I'd read the first one, said, when are you going to write a second one? And I said, you have no idea how much it took to write this one. But then, because it was a period of years. But then I got the hankering to go for it. And I decided to write Tennessee Thunder. And continuing, it's written so that it can stand on its own, but it's also written as a sequel.
Yes.
Because if you read the last chapter in Dawn's Gray Steel, it very definitely lends itself towards a sequel, having to deal with Fallen Timbers and Nathan Bedford Forrest and William Sherman on the arm. But I didn't do that on purpose when I wrote Tennessee Thunder. Tennessee Thunder can stand on its own. It's a lot bigger. It's a much more involved novel. Dawn's Great Steel is about 250 pages. Tennessee Thunder is closer to 800. And the more I got into writing it, the more I got into writing it. But one of the things I learned from the first one that I put into play with the second one is that I wrote the closing chapter first.
Interesting.
So now I knew where I was going.
Yes.
With the story. And the other thing that most people don't do, a lot of these guys who write novels, history novels, they've got ghostwriters, they've got researchers or something like that for people to help them. No, not me. Everything that I write about, I researched it. I have been there to those battlefields. I have recreated those battles in various and sundry forms, Shiloh, Chickamauga, Stone Throw, et cetera, et cetera. I have actually done it. So I have done everything with it except actually hearing the actual bullets whizzing by my head.
Yep, exactly. You mentioned the first book, Dawn's Gray Steel. That's still available. That, as I mentioned, a 5-star Amazon review by Newt Gingrich, and the book we're focused on today, Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies by Daniel F. Korn. The book's published by Page Turner. You'll find the books there, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. A direct link will get you information on the books, and you can order them as well. And Daniel's website is ayrpresents.com. That's on our website as well, and I'll give you that as we go through the program today. It's interesting, touring the battlefields, and I did years and years ago, but if you're sort of off by yourself, they sort of come alive, don't they, where you can almost sense what was happening. It takes you back in time. It gives you a whole, you can read about them, but to actually walk the ground and be there, you can sense history.
Yeah, I mean, I feel them.
Yes,
And I know
yes.
some people that might sound silly, but I feel their presence when I'm on those fields. I have oftentimes, like for example, when I'm in Gettysburg, on or around that time that those things happened, the events happened, like today, which would have been, the Pickett's charge.
Yes.
But I will make a point, if possible, to be on that battlefield or whatever battlefield I'm at a time when a critical event occurred, like in the case of Pickett's Charge, I'm there at 3:30, 3:45 in the afternoon, standing there at the Stone Wall, or on the other side over where the Lee Monument is, where Pickett, he and met after the fight, just because I feel their presence. And then some people have a hard time accepting that and understanding that. But it's happened too many times to us, to me and others on fields of glory that we just can't shun it. We can't just blow it off. It's too real. It's too real. And I've got, I've gotten photographs of things that just simply aren't supposed to be there. And at the National Park, for example, at Chancellorsville has a copy of one of those photographs now. The tree that was supposedly shot totally away at the angle at the Spotsylvania courthouse fight. I asked a ranger to pose and hold his arm out to give me an idea of how big the tree was after a talk. And he did, and I took the picture. And when I got it was digital camera, when I pictures, there's the outline of the tree behind his arm. And so I made copies of the picture and I gave one to them at the park, and they were quite impressed with that. I said, wow, okay. Things like that. It's just, but the writing itself, one of the things that I really wanted to do when I wrote the stories was to get into the heads, into the minds of the people who were actually involved and turn them into things that weren't an abstract on a page, but into real living flesh and blood people so that you could see them. And then each chapter in the books are written so they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth between both sides. One of the things that has been commented on is how evenly balanced I do this. They said, we can't really tell what side you favor, if any, either side,
Yes.
by the way you write. You've got it really well balanced. And that's just that's I tried to do that on purpose. But I also want people to understand these are real people. Braxton Bragg, who is a main character, of course, in Tennessee Thunder, Braxton Bragg, his mother, while she was carrying him in the womb, was assaulted by a free black, sexually assaulted. She shot and killed the man. She was put on trial for murder. She was acquitted. But you cannot tell me, for example, that all of the stress that his mother was experiencing while he was in the womb was not transmitted to that child. And that affects him as he goes through life.
Yes.
So these are the kinds of things that I'm trying to get people to understand. There's reasons why people do and did what they did.
And you bring these people to life. Our guest is Daniel F. Korn. He's the author of Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies. Time is going by so quickly, but I'd like to take a couple of the people that you bring to life in the book and just briefly give me some information on those. Mary Walker, a fascinating character, a woman who, a very impressive person. Tell me a little bit about Mary.
Mary Walker was born in Oswego, New York. Her father was a doctor, an abolitionist family. He raised his children, most of his children were girls, to be very, very independent minded. She managed to get into Cornell, I believe it was Cornell Medical School, graduated. Married one of the other graduates, her husband. Her wedding ceremony, she did not wear a traditional wedding gown. She wore pantaloons on her with her dress and everything. She managed to get certified to be a surgeon. George Henry Thomas gave her a job as a battlefield surgeon, regimental battlefield surgeon, in the Army of Tennessee and the Army of the Tennessee, excuse me, and she performed very well, very, very, very well. But she is also the only woman in history to win the Congressional Medal of Honor, which she did for her services at Chickamauga and as a prisoner of war. She was very definitely a feminist. She wore pants as much as possible. She also carried a 45 Colt 45 in her dress with her and everything. No one messed with her. I think she could shoot quite well, as it turned out. And she was an amazing person. When they tried to take the medal back from her at one point, and she met them at the door of her home with a double-barreled shotgun saying, "Over my dead body, you're going to get this back." And when she was buried, that medal was pinned to the breast of her dress. She was wearing a men's suit when she was men's suit when she was buried, and her grave, she is still wearing, I mean, the medal's on her in the grave. So she was a fascinating story of a feminist. One of the things about that was that when I wrote that, one of my students had asked me, is there a way you can work me into the story? She was a little girl, young lady, I should say, one of my students. And she's the nurse that you see referred to in the story working with Mary Walker. Is Jenny, the student. And that's how I worked her into the story. There are very few people in any of my stories that are not real, very real. John Lincoln Clem and Johnny Shiloh, as he became known, the drummer boy of Shiloh, et cetera, et cetera. Those were real people.
Well, and talk about that. John Lincoln Clem started off with drummer boy and turned into an infantryman.
Yeah, he eventually, I mean, when he left the service of the United States Army, he was a brigadier general. He was the oldest left active duty a member of the military at when he retired that had actually served in the Civil War and all of that. So he's quite the story himself. I mean, he ran away from home. He was only like 10 years old when all this started with him, 10 years old. They had actually taken a rifle and carved it down or cut the stock and everything down enough so that he could carry it if necessary. But in combat at Chickamauga, he shot a Confederate colonel right off his horse in the fighting and everything. But he was quite the character himself. The Disney film made about him, Kevin Cochran and Brian Keith are the major players in that film. But that was made back in the 50s, and that inspired me to do this.
It's just so amazing to it comes alive when you hear these names and you give us great detail on these people. Lincoln had a brother-in-law that was involved in this, Ben Helm. Tell me a little bit about
him. Ben Hardin Helms was at Chickamauga. He was Lincoln's brother-in-law, was Mary's sister's brother, sister's husband, excuse me. And Lincoln had offered him a position with the government and everything prior to the war, which Helms turned down. And he was at Chickamauga, and he was killed at Chickamauga, as was Richard Kirkland, too, the Angel of Mary's Heights. That fighting around Horseshoe Ridge was horrible. But afterwards, his widow went to stay at the White House with the Lincolns, and people would criticize Lincoln for having a Confederate in the White House kind of thing. And he's going, you know, I'm not going to tell my wife she can't bring her sister here.
Yes.
That's family. And let it go at that. And he would just let it go. He didn't make a big fuss about it. But yeah, that's a sad story in itself. It is said that Lincoln cried when he received the news about Ben Helm being dead.
Makes everybody more human. The book is really so well written. Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies by Daniel F. Korn, our guest on the program. Korn is K-O-R-N. If you're Googling, his website is ayrpresents.com. That's on our website. You can go there and click and get some of the information. Interesting, too, if somebody's talking about Jefferson Davis, you would ask which one. There were, two Jefferson Davises that were involved?
Yes. You had, of course, the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, who was very focused, particularly early in the book, on Tennessee Thunder. And then you have Jefferson C. Davis, who was a Union general who was involved in a duel later on in the course of the war, and where he shot and killed another Union general over, an argument, things that they had said. He was never prosecuted for it. They're two entirely different people. And I know some people get confused and say, wait a minute, Jefferson Davis is supposed to be on the Confederate side. Yeah, but there was a Jefferson Davis on the Union side as well. And he was in the Atlanta campaign, Sherman's March to the Sea and everything. And he is supposedly the general that picked up the pontoons and the boats and everything and refused to allow the contraband that were following the Sherman's army towards the sea to cross this river with them and continue along with them. Whether or not, you know, how much of that is true or not is speculation sometimes. But he was definitely a colorful character, but he was not that good a general either. Rosecrans, who led the Army of the Cumberland, was an excellent general, as was his second-in-command, George Thomas. Both of them were superb commanders. Unfortunately, Rosecrans had a problem. Rosecrans stammered. He had a stutter. And if he got tired, the more tired he got, the more he'd stammer, the more he'd stutter until he sounded like Donald Duck. And at Chickamauga, he did not get enough rest. He didn't get any rest at all. And as a result of that, he's making decisions that he never should have been making because he's so tired that his mind is not working the way it's supposed to work properly. And he, as a result of that, he will make some rather interesting screw-ups, which Longstreet will take advantage of on that second day at Chickamauga and everything. And here's a guy who's quite the person, Pete Longstreet, James Peter Longstreet.
The book is Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies. You talked about the one with Rosecrans. A few minutes left in the program. On the other side, you've got Braxton Bragg. Talk about him, hot-tempered.
Which one?
Braxton Bragg.
Braxton Bragg could not get... Braxton Bragg was the only man. He was well-known. In the pre-war army, he had actually occupied three positions on a government post where he had been the chief of artillery, the second in command, and the quartermaster commander as well. And he put in a requisition to himself for supplies, which he turned down because he said that the argument wasn't strong enough, sufficient enough in order to release the merchandise. Then he took and wrote a letter to himself as second in command on the post, requesting the same materials and stuff, and he turned himself down again. And his commanding officer looked at him and told him, he says, "Brex, you're the only guy I know who can argue with himself and lose the argument."
An amazing story. We so often, we just see the battles, we see the numbers, the casualties, we know the outcome. Behind all of that are people. There were sons and daughters and husbands and wives and brothers and sisters. Town civilians that got caught up in this. It's just an amazing period of time that Daniel brings to life in Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies. Obviously a passion for you, both this book and Dawn's Gray Steel. What are you working on now? Another book?
I am trying to. It is on the Battle of Franklin. And it is. I've been there a number of times. I've interviewed a number of very... well-known people. Thomas Cartwright, for example, who's the guru of the Battle of Franklin, has sat through several interviews for me and had conversations about it. Because that's perhaps you'd call it the Pickett's Charge of the West. Of course, that was Hood in command of that force when they attacked. And it's to some people, it's the bloodiest 6 hours in all of the Civil War. The bodies were just literally stacked in heaps. You're talking about a charge that had no artillery support, that was 2 miles in length rather than 1 mile, like Pickett's Charge, and again, an attack in depth, and it just kept coming in waves, and they just slaughtered. My working title is The Day the Generals Died, because there are 13 Confederate generals who are either killed, wounded, or missing at this battle, including Pat Claiborne, who was considered to be the Stonewall of the West.
I love that title. That really captures your attention. How are you coming on that, and when do you think maybe that'll be available?
It'll be a while yet.
Okay. No pressure. I don't want to pin you down to a date, but I'd be anxious. You bring history alive.
It's a hard story to write because I know what happened there, and trying to write it in the same vein as I have the others, because Hood was the man. Had lost the use of his left arm at Gettysburg. His right leg was amputated after Chickamauga, at the hip, and very few people ever survived that, let alone come back to command an army. They had to tie him on his horse to get him to ride around. And even those there are those who say his mind was okay, that he wasn't using the laudanum anymore or any of these other things. I'm sorry, you can't lose those various body parts and everything and not have it affect you mentally.
Yes, yes.
And that's, and I'm trying to write the story from the point of view of that. I wrote the preface to it, and had a friend of mine who's an English teacher read it, and she says, oh my gosh, she says the shivers are just running up and down my spine reading just this. And I'm going, well, we'll see what happens as we go through it, because it's I compare what happens there to the devil sitting on his throne and laughing away while watching all of this.
It's just, I can't wait for that. And while we're waiting, we've got your other books, the two books that are out there that we can read. The one, the first book is Dawn's Gray Steel. This new one is Tennessee Thunder, A Tale of Two Armies by Daniel F. Korn. That's K-O-R-N. If you're Googling, his website, arypresents.com. The book published by Page Turner. You'll find the book at Page Turner in their bookstore. You'll find it, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places, and links on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And it all started with a supernatural incident. And I'm still chilled when you're talking about that and how that this whole process started. Daniel, a pleasure. I really enjoyed having you on the program today, the conversation on the Civil War. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
You're welcome.
And the book's available. It is our pleasure. The book's available wherever books are sold, and Daniel Frederick Korn's website, ayrpresents.com. All of this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And you're listening to This Week in America back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.